This is Talk for Food. Your portal into quantum possibility. I'm Adam Abraham. Each week, I'll be your guide on this expedition, where we'll explore the near and far reaches of this thing called life on Earth and beyond. Talk for Food is brought to you by Philos Books, whose titles for the mind and heart reflect a passion for humanity. And PureHealingFoods.com, using Mother Nature's best to help you thrive. Hello again, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Talk for Food. I'm Adam Abraham, your host, who comes to you each week to journey into the realm of quantum possibility, where we look at life, we look at it from another perspective that is hopeful, that looks at and that acknowledges not only our potential, but our power to make a difference, to do something, to achieve something that our heart wants to happen, that our heart is invested in. You know, everything that I do, everything that I say, my heart is in. And so I don't really have to act like anything because I'm really being myself. And when we learn to accept, to find out who we are, to accept who that is, what it is, and come from that place, some powerful, powerful changes can occur because our faith in ourself, our faith in the possibility, our faith in the process of being the creator beings that we are becomes somewhat akin to the size of a mustard seed. And when it becomes that big, some powerful things can happen. And that's what we're about. I want to say, in with all this look at the positive, I want you to understand, too, that this is not being done by casting a blind eye to that which appears not to be positive, because right now in this day and age, a lot of events are occurring that appear to be anything but positive, from earthquakes in the Far East in China to the massive devastation in Middle America. We're feeling it, you know? We are aware of it. We are experiencing challenges that really cut to the core. They really challenge, they really encourage us. I won't even say force, but they really take us to the brink to understand, to ask the question, what is real? What is important? And what is possible? This show today, we're going to talk about something that really may sound quite odd, but it seems to be like the thing to say and the subject to cover right now. I was in California recently to interview a doctor who came from Siberia, and I'm leading up to that because it's a show that's coming up in the future. But while I was there, I met a gentleman who came with some knowledge and some information that was out of left field. It was not in my radar. I didn't expect that. And yet it was like a gift that was presented to me that was unexpected. And so when we come back after the break, we're going to talk about bovine genetics and its impact on you and on your life. And I'll tell you why in a bit. My guest is Gerald Fry of Bovine Engineering and Consulting out of Rosebud, Arkansas. And when we come back, we're going to understand just why this is so important right now. When Talk for Food returns on WebTalkRadio.net. Stay tuned.
Dr. Alan Pressman.
There are almost 400 pages to this book, 369 to be exact. Every page is chock full of information. You know, you just mentioned that 68% of Americans don't consume the RDA of magnesium. 19% of Americans do not even consume half of the RDA. And probably the RDA is too low to begin with. He's right. Magnesium, crucial. 68% of us in this country Do not consume enough of this incredible mineral involved in 325 enzymatic reactions in our body, most of them concerning the generation of energy. And baby, you need energy to heal. Very, very much so. The name of the book is Transdermal Magnesium Therapy. The author is Dr. Mark Sirkis. He's a researcher and a clinician, and I'm very impressed with this book, very impressed with the information.
Your power to maintain and restore well-being is enhanced when you know what magnesium naturally does for you and the wide-ranging consequences of deficiency. In addition, Dr. Sirkis introduces a simple but elegant way to replenish the body's stores of Mother Nature's catalyst for health. Order your copy of Transdermal Magnesium Therapy today at Amazon.com and find bookstores everywhere. Revitalize Pure Marine Phytoplankton, brought to you by PureHealingFoods.com. Do you suffer from cancer, colitis, psoriasis, high blood pressure, low energy, fibromyalgia, headaches, type 2 diabetes, low immune function, eczema, or just feel you aren't getting the nutrition you need on a daily basis? Well, many people are saying they finally found relief from these issues by simply adding a teaspoon of Revitalize Pure Marine Phytoplankton to their daily routine. Are you looking for life-changing results or just more energy? Revitalize Pure Marine Phytoplankton at PureHealingFoods.com is considered to be one of the most nutrient-dense foods on Earth. Many people who are suffering from these diseases have had a complete turnaround, and others are finding that their quality of life is enhanced over and above anything they have experienced before. I invite Talk for Food listeners to visit PureHealingFoods.com or call 760-301-0940 for your chance to feel better than ever before with Revitalize Pure Marine Phytoplankton. As an added incentive, PureHealingFoods.com is offering free shipping worldwide. Now you have no excuse not to give your body the nutrients it needs. Revitalize Pure Marine Phytoplankton from PureHealingFoods.com. We're about to get this edition of Talk for Food going here on WebTalkRadio.net with Adam Abraham. Just recently, I wrote and published an article on my blog, Thought for Food, if you ever wondered where the name Talk for Food came from. My blog is called Thought for Food. It's on WordPress. And I wrote an article called Thoughts on Diarrhea, Salmonella Scares, and the FDA. And I think you might find it to be good reading because this situation that we're having with flooding that's going on right now in the Midwest, losing crops, the corn, man, it's just piling on. It seems to be piling on. But in a way of speaking, there also may be a silver lining on this cloud. But definitely the whole subject with this issue of diarrhea, of salmonella, E. coli, and the looking that we're doing, I want to bring to your attention once again my DVD, my documentary, Understanding MMS, Conversations with Jim Humble. How we treat water right now, not only the water in our bodies, but the water that we allow into it, is really important. MMS awareness is even more important today than it has ever been, and that importance is going to continue. Because unless you understand what MMS is and how it works and the efficacy of it, the scares that the FDA and our well-meaning government put out will have some traction, and they really don't need to. We need to subtract the traction that they have, and they're coming from fear, but they're coming from where they understand things right now, the general understanding. But I want to invite you to look at and visit understanding-mms.com. Get yourself a copy of the DVD, the documentary on MMS, and it's only $29.95. And it's also available in bulk packaging in units of 10, 25, 50, 100, and 150 discs. No packaging, just a disc. but the unit prices are much, much less, from $6.50 per unit all the way down to $3.33 a unit. So consider that, please. Just information is all it is, but armed with the proper information and an understanding of it, you can really find yourself transcending and being beyond fear. So please take a visit and pick up a copy. Now, let's get on to this week's show. We cover all kinds of subjects on this show, all of them relating to the health of the whole being, of your mind, of your body, and your spirit. And we're discovering every time, every week, the big truths that we tend not to know about and start to get an appreciation for how they affect our lives, the not knowing as well as the knowing. We have talked about milk. We've talked about raw, unpasteurized milk recently with Mark McAfee of Organic Pastures. We've talked about health in many different ways, but we're about to talk about something that is nearer and dearer to you and I than you know. We're going to talk about the cow. This is Talk for Food. Today, this is going to be talking about the cow. In one of those very synchronistic occasions in life where you walk into a situation and you get a blessing that you didn't know you're going to have, I have had the pleasure to meet Gerald Fry of the Bovine Engineering and Consulting. He's out of Rosebud, Arkansas, in fact. And first of all, I'm going to say, Gerald, thank you and welcome to Talk for Food, and thank you for being on the show.
Thank you very much for allowing me to be a part of your show, Mr. Adam.
You know things about cows that we ought to know.
Well, I agree. The producers really should be the ones that know, and we're basically talking about a gene pool, a genetic profile. Mm-hmm. Genotype is the thing that we should really be concerned about. Everybody that produces food should remember he's in the business for producing food, not for a commodity product. And he should produce something that produces a fine eating experience. He will be paid for it. Plus, it doesn't cost any more to produce a fine food than it does a commodity product.
And of course, by definition, if we talk in terms of food, there is an implicit understanding that that food should have some nutritional value.
Well, it is supposed to. And if we, the producer, paid attention to the genetic profiles that's in whatever species we are producing, and I will hold my comments to the animal world, more specifically to the bovine world, if we would pay attention to the gene pools and apply strict trait characteristic procedures to our selection criteria, then there would not be any tough beef or milk at the grocery store. It would all be a gourmet type product.
So the listener may or may not know the significance of why we are talking about genetics and cows. And I want to, in the time we're together here, break it down for them so that we can begin to understand what is going on and how it's impacting us.
Well, about 1920, America started moving into the Industrial Revolution age, and it became important then to produce tons, pounds, and bushels. That really didn't get escalated greatly until about 1940. And in the cattle industry by 1940, there was beginning to be supplementations other than grass, feeds other than grass on the market. We were beginning to understand the different proteins and carbohydrates and enzymes in the different grain products that were being grown, learning how to put them together to balance a ration. And we could build a supplement with much, much more energy in it than grass has. Okay. And so we started moving away from the type of cow that would consume grass and do well on that grass to a more thin-shouldered, lanky type animal that, if she did not receive a high-energy supplement, would not finish for table consumption. And so at that point, starting in about 1920, we started changing our breeding tactics.
Okay.
And we have continued with that tactic right on down until the present day. And we have totally changed the body conformation and style of our animals.
You're listening to Talk for Food on WebTalkRadio.net. This is Adam Abraham. My guest is Gerald Fry of Bovine Engineering and Consulting, one of the foremost authorities on cows. So we've basically gone from taking a naturally grass-feeding animal and began feeding it grain?
We started feeding grain even to the grass type animals back then. And when I say grass type, I'm talking about two different body styles. We call it phenotype or body type.
Right.
And the grass type animal does not work well in the feedlot. It gains extremely well, but the grass type animal has a genetic propensity to have a lot of fat cells, and those fat cells fill up with the high energy ration by about 60 to 80 days, and they turn into yield grade fours and fives. And so the market does not want that excessive fat. By 1960, we had learned how to make candles and lard and petroleum out of lard or grease, the oils
out
that
of,
we have
out of
grain and product.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Oils out of grain, mm-hmm. and candles out of oil product and plastics and a lot of the clothing we wear. And so all of a sudden there was no demand anymore for all of the excess fat that we have on our animals. And so the type of animal that was the most healthy for us was discriminated against at the marketplace, and people quit growing them, and they started growing the tall, lanky, heavy, high-maintenance animals that we have today. And all of the traits for quality of milk and meat were left behind.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned grade four and five. What is that referring to?
That really simply means that they've got a half inch plus of back fat on their back.
Okay.
Really has nothing to do with the quality of the meat. It has to do with how much fat is on the animal's back.
But this change, though, in the food has had an impact on the quality of the meat, which in itself is having an impact on the nutrition that it's delivering to us who is consuming it then.
Adam, absolutely. The change you're talking about was created from a form of starvation. This change that's been brought about is the elimination of fat. And when you start eliminating the fat from the diet of an animal, the way that you do that is that you reduce the butter fat in the milk of the cow that produces the next calf. Mm-hmm. And so without a proper amount of butter fat going into the diet of a young calf, then that calf cannot grow frame, grow muscle mass, and create fat cells all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he can grow frame and grow some muscle mass, but he has to have a certain amount of butter fat, a minimum of 3% or more from his mother. And I'm talking about beef cows now. The dairy should be more than that. Actually, 3.5 to 4 would be better in the beef cow. So he can grow frame and produce some muscle mass, but he can't do both of those and produce fat cells without a proper amount of butter fat. And because of the process of production, then nobody pays any attention to the amount of butter fat. Nobody even selects for butter fat, especially in beef cows today. Then we've had starvation going on. In the first month of a baby calf's life, the system literally asks the question, just to paraphrase that, that are you going to provide enough energy for me to grow and develop fat cells all at the same time? And if that mother has been giving a good amount of butter fat, then the answer to the question is yes. And so the calf will begin, even in the first month of age, will begin building the fat cell. It's not filled, but the cell is there.
Mm-hmm.
And if that milk is low in butter fat, then the answer is no. And so the calf never builds the intramuscular fat cells. And so he grows up with just a frame with some muscle mass scattered over it.
The listener may or may not be getting, so what has this got to do with me? You know, kind of
what has got to do with me is the absolute correct question in all this. The qualities of meat is in the fat.
Uh-huh.
Protein is in the red meat. The CLAs, the omega-3s, the conjugated linoleic acid, blah, 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 is all in the fats. And so if the animal's low in fats, then we don't get the proper amounts of those numerous fatty acids in the meat that we consume.
Wow.
And the taste, absolutely the taste is involved in that.
We were talking earlier, and Gerald can look at a cow, for example, and determine, and we're talking about a cow that's still all put together, not on a rack, but and he can determine whether it's worth eating or not. Now, talk about that a little bit, Gerald. I know you've looked at a lot of cows, but each one tells you something.
Well, this statement is not to put science down. We need science. Science and agriculture need to work together. Our ancient forefathers, the framers, the builders of all of the breeds of cattle that we have, were put together, some of them even before the 10th century and some after the 10th century, long before science was ever developed. And all of those framers, the builders of our different breeds of cattle, both dairy and beef, and I'm mainly talking about the British breeds of cattle because of the quality, the potential of the quality that they can produce, did not have science at all to help them to determine what was a good Angus, a good North Devon, a good Hereford, Jersey, Guernsey, any of those. They did it with their wisdom. They did it with their eyes. They recognized that in those cows that had extremely high butter fat, that there was certain things about those cows that they either had or didn't have. Like a cow, if you want a cow that's got high butter fat, if you want to be able to go to your herd and select that cow out, go select the cow out that has a bald udder, has no hair on the udder. And she's going to be a cow high in butter fat. That same cow will also be high in intermuscular fat. Mm-hmm. So see, it works both in beef and dairy the same. And the small cannon bone, the small dense bone always has very fine textured meat. And you tell that by looking. The cow that has the high butter fat, the cow that has the intermuscular fat with the bald udder will also have a skin that is as soft as your shirt. And the downward folds on the side of the neck and the shoulders will tell you that. You do not have to touch the cow. As she walks by you, as she turns her head back around sideways, just look and see how close the folds are together, the downward folds. And the closer they are together, the softer the hide. It's actually as easy to recognize a superior cow as it is to recognize your wife or your child as they walk through the room where you are. It's a matter of learning those procedures, mm-hmm. practicing them, and believing what you're finding.
So now, what are the consequences? Because since it's very clear we're not demonstrating that level of discernment, what kind of cows are we routinely accepting into our lives, and to what effect?
Well, even science will tell you that if you don't select for it, you will automatically lose it. Just simply by I didn't select for it. So what we are getting into our system today is meat that really, when you compare it to the kind of meat I'm talking about, is unpalatable.
Now, the thing is, if I own a ranch and I'm breeding cows, this is making, well, this may be heretical, or it may be it depends on the mindset, but there's an effect for the consumer. For example, getting back to the feeding of grain versus grass. The cow was not designed to be eating grain, first of all. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So the fact that it's like shoving coal into something that was designed for paper or something like that, you know?
Yes. Creates too much heat.
Yeah. So there is I'm trying to appreciate how that shift, that fundamental change in policy is affecting, say, the nutritional value that's delivered. You mentioned the texture and the toughness of the meat, but what about its quality as food? What about even additives, hormones, and other things that may be in there? What effect does that translate?
The hormones, the feed additives, the ionophores, the growth hormones of all types totally changes the quality of the meat. I don't know that it changes the structure of the meat, but when you feed a cow, and when I say cow, I'm talking about a bull, a cow, a steer, something that you're finishing or something that you're milking to put milk on the dinner table, all of the conjugated linoleic acid and all of the omega-3 and other fatty acids are totally eliminated from the flesh of that animal. Now then, I will say that if you've been milking a cow with no grain and just on grass and the omega-3 is high in her milk and you start feeding her grain, the omega-3 will go away. Now then, if you take the grain away and put that same cow back on grass, in about 30 days, the omega-3 will return to the milk. Mm-hmm. But if you've ever had a cow, for whatever reason, on grain, then you have eliminated all of her omega-3 and conjugated linoleic acid, and no matter what you do, no matter how long you leave that cow on grass after she has once consumed grain for a period of time, her omega-3 and conjugated linoleic acid never returns. That was work that was done by Utah State University in the last 5 to 8 years. Dr. Tilak Demon has that research.
Omega-3 is something really important.
Omega-3 is one of the largest cancer fighters we have, and the CLA is a free radical contender and very, very, very important in our diet.
So essentially, we're getting meat that if it were fed grass, the meat would normally have this omega-3 in it.
It would.
Okay, but we've now shifted to grain and it does not. We have milk that, well, it's pasteurized and other stuff. It doesn't have omega-3s in
it. That's right.
So what we've been doing culturally is just shifting our expectations to the extent that, well, just shift to expect to be getting cancer as opposed to expect to get nutrition that would naturally provide protection from it and prevention from it.
Absolutely. With today's diet as it is, and has been this way for a long time, there is a high percent of the people that you can expect to have cancer by the time they're 60 to 65 years of age.
And of course, the talking heads on the news and everything are reading press releases to tell you the same things.
Yes.
So in other words, accept that as the way it is without questioning the way things are produced that help facilitate and make that happen.
Right.
Wow. You're listening to Talk for Food. We're here, and actually, I'm on location in Del Mar, California, and I'm talking with Gerald Fry of Bovine Engineering and Consulting out of Rosebud,
Arkansas.
Rosebud, Arkansas. And we're going down. We're talking some tough talk and some true talk about cows, because even though you and I may not spend much time on the farm, what's happening on the farm is affecting our lives here and now. When we come back, we're going to go deeper into this subject, and I want you to understand what's being delivered to you so that you know whether you need to be consuming this stuff or not. So Talk for Food will be back after these messages. Stay tuned here on WebTalkRadio.net. Global Light Network brings you an entire line of products for conscious living that directly impact your well-being. This means products that intelligently replenish critical nutritional components, such as magnesium and zinc in ionic form. Products that neutralize deuterium and lower the specific gravity for better hydration of your drinking water. Or how about products that raise your body's pH and, via magnetism, selectively removes bacteria, viruses, parasites, and toxins while leaving healthy cells intact. If you already know why these are important to your well-being, then you'll want to know Global Light Network. If you don't know why it's important, ask someone who does. Then point your browser to globallight.net or call us toll-free at 1-888-236-2108.
You may not have heard, so listen carefully. Most of mankind's diseases have now been conquered, including asthma, pneumonia, flu, diabetes, AIDS, hepatitis C, the common cold, and dozens of others.
The details of this amazing secret has been freely disclosed in Jim Humble's book, The Miracle Mineral Supplement of the 21st Century, so that it will never be lost. The book is in simple language. You can make it in your kitchen.
In America and Africa, over 100,000 cases of malaria and other diseases have been successfully treated, and thousands of clinical trials have been run using the same formula. Download the first one half of the Miracle Mineral book free at www.miraclemineral.org.
So take back your health.
Go to miraclemineral.org.
We come in all shapes and sizes, but for all our apparent differences, we share an important oneness.
I am my body,
not.
Now your child can discover the oneness behind human diversity with I Am My Body, Not, from Philos Books. This progressive book, written by Adam Abraham, helps parents and teachers introduce some of the most basic human concepts and questions. Celebrate the body and the spirit with I Am My Body, Not. Order now, just $19.95 plus shipping and handling.
I Am My Body, Not is available at philos.com. That's philos.com. Order yours today.
This is a place where I would start the segment off with a or something like that, okay? Does that give you an idea of what we're talking about? You're listening to Talk for Food on WebTalkRadio.net with Adam Abraham. And my guest is Gerald Fry of Bovine Engineering and Consulting. And no, I'm not actually home on the range right now, but I am at a beautiful home in Del Mar, California. And Gerald is an authority on bovine genetics, really. And we've been talking about some of the effects of changes that have occurred over the past few decades in, or generations probably, in the practice of just in how cattle is raised, fed, and treated, and really looking at the impact this had on human health, because there is definitely an impact. Gerald, to start this segment off, I want to talk a little bit about RBST, because those are some terms, that an acronym that has come up from time to time recently, and we apparently are given these reassurances that there's nothing really to be concerned about there. But what's your take on that?
Well, Adam, my take is very negative about the use of it, and my concern is about the welfare of the bovine. I am a husbandman. Mm-hmm. I practice husbandry. I have a symbiosis with my cows. I'm very in tune with what's going on. And if I have a cow that there's something that's bothering her, then I want to have some kind of an effect on the cause of what's bothering her. I don't want to propagate that. I want to eliminate it. She can't produce for me with longevity if I don't eliminate that problem. And I'm going to get a little bit technical here about the cow that's had the bovine growth hormone used on her. They use a very small needle. It's a hair-like needle, about a half inch long, and they stick that in the skin right beside the anal opening. And those cows, they get a shot, I believe, once a week. I've never used it. I've been around a lot of the dairies, and most of those cows have big old scabby open sores in that area where they give that shot. Mm. It's ugly, it's nasty, it stinks, and flies pile up on it. It's everything in the world opposite to what I would want or want to drink that milk. Now then, those cows, as long as they give them that, well, immediately after they start giving it, the cow starts a new growth pattern. It's a growth hormone. Mm. And so she starts growing, and they have to quit giving the shots to get the cow to cycle, to come back into estrus so they can get her pregnant. And the rebreed rate on those cows is extremely low. I know that it's not more than 1.7 calves per cow, and it's probably less than that, but I'm not sure of that number. I know it's not more than 1.7. And so those cows are just literally burned up in 1.5 lactations, and they just go, guess where? They have a Big Mac attack, and they wind up on your dinner table as a hamburger somewhere 3 weeks to a month after they can't get them pregnant. They've milked them completely out, and they're sick. Their absence of some kind of minerals, nutrition of some kind in their system that stops them from cycling or stops them from maintaining a pregnancy.
But it doesn't stop them from being cycled through the food chain to end up on the tables or in the stomachs of human beings.
They say that the effects of that is not detrimental to the health of humans, but I would not eat it. I won't even eat one of my own cows that I've grown on my farm if something should happen to it, that it would have a pink eye or some other health aspect. I will not take her to the sale barn. If I won't eat the cow's flesh myself or drink the milk from her, then she gets disposed of, goes to a zoo or goes to somebody that has a lot of dogs or something that can use that animal, not for human consumption.
I'm curious as to why, if that site where this injection is made produces that type of sore and attracts flies and everything else to the extent that there's a concentration, why is that not subject to some level of inspection to the extent that that's allowed to just happen and not be somehow changed, mitigated, or rectified? I don't understand that.
I don't understand it either, Adam, and I've been in this business for 67 years. Nobody pays any attention to it. The people that use it evidently don't care, and the people that make the product evidently don't care, and suppose they must be protected by the government or somebody. There's nobody that comes by anybody's farm and inspects the health and welfare of those cows. There's no state requirement or law for that, and I don't want one.
Mm-hmm.
I want respect and responsibility coming from producers.
I would like it, too, as opposed to having somewhat a sledgehammer over them to say, you must do this in order to do it. But, you know, the dairies that take it upon themselves to say they do not use this with their cows is always a curious to hear right underneath it, this in this small talk ease, for someone to say, well, there's no significant, tests have shown that there's no significant difference between, in real fast, in other words, what you just said above, never mind, even though they went to the expense to say they don't use this stuff.
Right. There's always loopholes to get around things like that. And, I think the responsibility of all this is going to fall more and more back onto the knowledge and understanding of the consumer to just absolutely refuse to buy anything that has any kind of a label on it with the nature of what you just quoted. I totally agree with you.
The one thing here, as we're taking steps to really educate and paint a picture of how these practices end up affecting human beings. Gerald, first of all, has a vision. We didn't get together just to bitch and moan about how things are being done. Gerald has a desire to make some changes and a vision on how to make them that would basically and intrinsically help humanity to begin getting back to where we need to be in our relationship with the cow. Let's talk about that for a little bit.
Well, even the healing of our soils can be done with our cows over a period of time with virtually no inputs into the soil. And you cannot do that with raising grains on the soils year after year after year as we've done. And I'm not saying that we should not raise grains. I'm saying that we can take pasture, can take land, turn it into pasture, and heal that land. Now then, when we heal the land, we automatically heal the cow, and we automatically then, because of that healthy cow, produce a fine food product where humans will stay healthy.
Is this a situation where we would still need to fill up a cow with antibiotics and stuff like that as
Absolutely
well?
Absolutely not. No, she would receive absolutely nothing but the grass or forage that she would eat off of the ground that she eats. Now then, in the process of time, until you plant grass, you get it to growing, the cows eat the grass, they digest it, they defecate back out on the ground. You may have to buy some tumble bugs and put out on your land that will disintegrate the manure and carry it down into the soil, and you will rebuild your soil. Now then, it takes a few years to get all this done. And in the interim, I personally do tissue analysis on my grass, and I build my own mineral. And if I don't need phosphorus in my mineral, then I'll use calcium. I've never helped anybody build a mineral program that didn't need calcium in it. and we use different kinds of calcium. Sometimes we have to use phosphorus, maybe a little selenium or iodine or...
What about magnesium?
Magnesium, almost everywhere, people have to have magnesium until they get their soil built back up. Mm-hmm. And so that's the way I approach this healthy cow syndrome. And until we do address these things, we will not have, no matter what your gene pool is, the perfectly formed animal. It takes nutrition to have a genetic profile in your cow. Nutrition allows for genetic expression. Nutrition allows for genetic qualities to develop. Mm-hmm. And until we understand that, and until we start providing the type of nutrition to grow these calves, to produce these cows and or the beef or the milk that we consume, then we will continue to suffer with our health in the meat and milk that we consume.
Wow.
It's empty food.
It's filler.
It's filler.
In a way of speaking, joke about replicated food, but this is simulated. This appears to be food, which is not. You asked that they have that commercial or the concept of God milk with a question mark. Well, that's a really good question, because the answer is no.
That's right.
You have what appears to be milk.
That's right.
And we have what appears to be beef, essentially.
Yeah.
And what it actually is, though, is detrimental, is filler, is like loading bricks into our stomach, because we don't even have what it takes to process it properly and digest it properly either.
That's true. And see, you're bringing up a very, very interesting point. And I know that I will get a lot of controversy on this, but I have found nobody in America that selects for a healthy, vibrant gland system in their cow. Mm-hmm. And when you have a healthy, vibrant gland system, then that means that the pituitary works, the thyroid works, the adrenal, the pancreas, the ovaries, the kidneys, testes, all are functioning, all have a specific job to do in the performance and the production of that cow. Each one of them puts the proper enzymes back into the meat and milk and butterfat of that animal, therefore providing a very healthy product. But we have to select cows that shed their hair at the first thought of the lengthening of the days in the spring of the year, and as quickly, within 2 to 3 weeks, they get all that hair shed out. Then they've got to be as slick and shiny as if you had walked out to the pasture and took some kind of polish and polished that cow. Nobody selects for that anymore. Mm-hmm. They just don't. And part of that is genetic selection. Part of it is the wisdom of selection. But I guess the main criterion that is using the right kind of bull that will help that cow produce those things. Mm-hmm. And see, we need to be producing paternal gene pools and not maternal gene pools. We have the whole system backwards in America. We will not produce high quality food until the producer understands and changes. No matter what the chef does, he cannot make it any better than what I deliver to him.
That's for sure. And the other part of that is perhaps the producer is not going to be inclined to change what they're doing until the consumer decides, I'm not going to buy this stuff.
I praise the day that that day gets here.
Sure. Well, I think as the consumer understands more that they are getting what appears to be steak, what appears to be beef, what purports to have nutritional value but does not, yeah, when they start understanding, and not only the, let's not stop with the nutritional value that is not being delivered, but let's look at what is being delivered in the form of hormones and pesticides and other types of additives that are getting into our systems, and they're becoming our problem.
Absolutely. Well, an example of what you're talking about, I have a customer in the Reno, Nevada area, mm-hmm, and their land has arsenic. It's in the drinking water, mm-hmm, and they do flood irrigation, so it's there too. They do not drink their water, but they do eat their beef. He has done a hair analysis on his cows numerous times, and this past summer he did a hair analysis on his own self, and his hair analysis was exactly the same as the hair analysis on his cows. His body's already loaded with arsenic.
It included arsenic. Yep, there you go. You're listening to Talk for Food on WebTalkRadio.net with Adam Abraham. We're talking cows. You know, I remember the commercial years ago, where's the beef?
Where is the beef?
You know, well, that's a good question because it's not showing up on our table.
It is not showing up.
So my guest is Gerald Fry of Bovine Engineering and Consulting, and we are talking about beef, real issues of cow husbandry, cow, our relationship with the cow.
The symbiosis.
Yes. And here's something in the time that we have for this show. You have a vision. Again, there's a desire for, not only just a desire, there's a need for our system, the way we're doing things to change. There is a need for that beef to be delivering something important, nutrition.
Amen.
Okay. You have a vision as a way to help the industry shift back to begin producing or providing those things. Let's talk about that.
Okay. Up until a dozen years ago, my wife and I ran a reproductive center, and I did sell that. I wanted to change and do some things different. So I started working as a consultant with people all over America and many other countries. And in fact, I've worked in every state in America except Delaware, and I believe there's probably not any cows in Delaware. Mm-hmm. And I ran across a bunch of small pockets of North Devon cattle in the Northeast one summer when I was up there working, and 100% of those cows had gourmet beef under their hide.
Okay.
And so I started researching that and found that the North Devon had never been outcrossed. They are still a pure breed of cattle. And so the genetic confirmations have not been altered any in those cows. And there's virtually none in America, and there certainly wasn't any bulls that could be used on those cows to propagate the kind and type and quality that we really needed to consumer grass. Mm-hmm. And so I started searching the world, and I found a herd in New Zealand. It's mm-hmm. called the Rotokawa Devon herd. And I visited that farm and bought a large supply of semen and 12 females and brought those to America. We started flushing those cows and creating embryo calves and providing bulls for people. And those bulls are genetically prepotent enough that they will stamp their sons to where those sons will produce restaurant quality beef or better. And so we are into that project and making that thing work. And there's getting to be a big demand from the people for the Devon, not because they're Devon, but because of the quality of meat that they're producing, mm-hmm. both as far as texture and tenderness. And then we've done a lot of work with Dr. Susan Duckett out of Clemson University for the fatty acid profiles and for the Warner Bratchler. And all of it has been well below the restaurant quality maximum standards. Mm-hmm. It's really a fine product and consistently fine.
You say well below or well within?
Well mm-hmm. within mm-hmm. the minimum, I guess it'd be maximum standards. In other words, for the Warner Bratchler, the cutoff is 4.1, and the closest we've been to the cutoff is 3.5. Maybe I've said that right.
So this is an index.
This is an index mm-hmm. that has been designed, researched in Texas, and put together. So the Devon thing will work and is working, and I have numerous herds of cattle scattered around across the country where we're putting embryos in and growing cows so we can actually have bulls scattered all over to help people get started. Last year, I was in Mexico, and I found a herd of Herefords that have been intact since 1931. The herd has been closed since 1969. There's never been another outside animal brought in, and every animal in that herd is just like the Devons that I'm talking about.
Okay.
And so at the end of June, I'm going to Mexico, and we're bringing 2 tractor-trailer loads of heifers to America, and we'll start building that Hereford herd. We're actually bringing brothers and sisters out of that same herd of cattle, and we will be doing the same thing with them that we're doing with the Herefords. We also have a herd of Angus. They're the old Aberdeen-style Angus that we're working with that are exactly the same way. Mm-hmm. We're producing bulls and selling those bulls now.
Let's take this scenario out some, and how will these, because I see these as seeds that you're planting, essentially.
Absolutely.
And but down the line, how will this impact, or how can this potentially impact the quality of the food that we end up having on our table?
The way it will impact that is our selection processes. If every bull we produce, any bull that we will sell to you, has got to meet certain standards, or we won't let him go. We actually will cut his head off ourselves. So we have developed that standard, and this is a standard that was set in place, some of it as much as 300 years ago. Some of it dates all the way back to the 15th century, mm-hmm. and this is literature that was written back then. And so we're holding ourselves to that standard and producing that. The other thing we're doing is I do schools. And I'm educating people sometimes 50 at a time, sometimes 20 at a time. The sad part of that is that almost every one of those students want me to come to their farm and work with them, and there's only so much time in a day, a week, a month, a year, and so I just can't go everywhere. But I have a website, and I've got a lot of stuff on that, and people can learn, and my phone bill is $700,000 a month. I do a lot of talking, and so educating the producer. And if there was a way that I could educate the consumer, I would be doing that. But I think my calling is to help the producers with their gene pools.
Well, the compliment to that, though, is to communicate with the consumer.
Yes.
And to have them more aware, more understanding, and more discerning as to what it is that they are getting, you know.
Yes.
If I'm sitting and if I'm going to the store looking for some beef, whether it's ground beef, whether it's a steak or whatever, it doesn't really matter, but am understanding that this beef came just the fact that it was grain-fed versus grass-fed. I mean, I think if we understand enough of the implications of treating and feeding cows grain, enough to say, no, if it's grain fed, I'm not going to buy it. We now begin to change. We now give the producers reason to take a look at what they're doing.
Yes.
Because frankly, if they're going to find themselves with consumers who are not going to buy grain fed beef, then they can't even pawn them off, not to mention the RBST fed ones. This is how we can shift this paradigm, by just being more discerning.
If we could get the housewife, mm-hmm. the consumer, to just start asking the manager at the meat counter, is this meat grass-fed or is it grain-fed? And in a lot of cases, he's going to say, oh, ma'am, it's all natural or it's organic. And and she's headed off at the
pass
because she really doesn't understand the language well. But if we could get her to understand those three things, it would help tremendously. And there's one other thing. If I could gather all of the housewives in one room somewhere, I could show every one of them within 5 minutes how to select their steaks. But the sad part of it is, after I show her how to do that, she's going to go home empty-handed every time because there's not any steaks in the grocery counter that I would show her that she could buy.
There are no examples there because it basically exposes.
It's a commodity product,
yeah.
And has not been selected for quality at all.
Yeah, yeah. Well, talking about quality is not all about something being the most expensive, but it's the quality of what's in it that will help maintain or sustain our health.
Well, that's the way you and I understand quality.
That's how I define it.
Yes.
Yes.
And that's the way it's supposed to be. But mm-hmm. when you see at the grocery counter this steak that has Choice or Prime on it, that doesn't have anything to do with what you and I are talking about. And the
right.
housewife does not know that.
Yes.
All it's telling, the word choice means, is supposed to mean that it's got 3.79% intermuscular fat in it.
Mm-hmm.
That's all that it means. No. Nothing else. Nothing about tenderness or texture. And see, fine quality meat is about texture.
Mm, wow.
And only tenderness comes with fine texture. That's when you get gourmet beef. And see, it's just as easy to produce gourmet beef as it is what's out there. Mm-hmm. All you do is change your breeding program.
We'll see where we go with all of this, but I certainly believe that these steps to make the public more aware, even of this practice of just feeding grain to cattle versus grass, that it is having an impact on it. As we understand that impact, perhaps we can then begin to change so that we get out of beef what nature intended us to get out of it.
Right.
But what we're getting right now was not part of the design, because our health is reflecting really what's in it.
Well, let me address this now, what you just said, from the producer standpoint, from a totally different avenue. Almost everybody has their calves born in sometime from January through April. They're through. Mm-hmm. Any cow that's pregnant during the hottest time of the year in the first trimester will have pituitary degradation if the temperature gets over 100 degrees.
Oh, okay.
So if the pituitary does not develop properly, and that happens in the first 3 months of the pregnancy, if the pituitary does not develop properly, then the thyroid, the adrenal, the pancreas, testes, ovaries, and kidneys never develop and function properly. And we're not taught that. We're mm-hmm. taught that if we don't have those calves at that time of the year, then we don't have anything to sell in the fall of the year. We're taught that if we don't have those calves born that time of the year, that when this lush grass comes up in the spring of the year, that mama won't give enough milk to produce, to raise and grow that calf, mm-hmm. which all is a lie. We have to return to nature. When does nature have her babies born? She has them born in May and June. Mm-hmm. And then she's open through the heat of the year. So she's had all summer then to graze on the most lush grass and herbage and leaves, brush, browse, whatever. And then that fall in September, she has produced an egg off of the highest quality of grass that she has access to create the next generation.
And understanding that natural process,
yes,
serves humanity in the best way.
That's right.
I mean, that is nature doing it in a proper timing to do what? Serve us who are impacted by that.
Very much.
And that will allow our health to be optimum as well.
Yes.
You know, so Gerald, how can our listeners find you?
They can get in touch with me at my website and email me at wgfry@alltel, that's alltel.net. Or my phone number is 501-454-3252.
All right.
And I would be happy to work with anybody in producing fine quality food.
All right. Thank you for being with us, and here's great breeding to you.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
When Gerald Fry came into my life and I had the opportunity to do this interview, I had no idea what would be happening just a few weeks later. I had no idea how relevant it might be to look at the opportunity to take a close look at how we treat cows now, how we raise them, how we raise cattle, and for that matter, how we eat them and the condition that they are when we eat them. And perhaps the major reduction in the availability of grains to feed cattle, maybe it is a blessing. Maybe it is an opportunity for us to look at feeding them grass again and putting the fats, the CLAs, the omega-3s that are supposed to be in the beef that we eat for human health, putting it back. How about that? It's just a thought. But in the meantime, that's the time we have for this episode of Talk for Food. Thank you for being a part of this show. Tell others about this show. And if you have any questions, comments, please email me at adam@talkforfood.com. And in the meantime, be well, be yourself, be hopeful, be optimistic, and above all, be aware. Until next time, this is Talk for Food. on WebTalkRadio.net. I'm out of here.
Talk for Food is a Philos Media Works production.